This show is sponsored by DollarShaveClub.com. Get high-quality razors sent to your door every month for a fraction of what you pay at retail. Now go to DollarShaveClub.com/church. That's DollarShaveClub.com/church. Or just go to JoeyDiaz.net and click on the Dollar Shave Club banner. This show is also sponsored by NatureBox, where you can order great-tasting, healthy snacks right to your door. Snack smarter in the new year with healthy and delicious treats like Santa Fe corn sticks and French toast granola. Support this podcast and get 50% off of your first order. Go to naturebox.com, promo code Joey. That's naturebox.com, promo code Joey. And lastly, the show is also sponsored by nailedatlife.com. For all the oil and wax smokers out there, for the premier vapor pen on the market, go to nailedatlife.com. Mention Joey Diaz and get 20% off.
Are you kidding me or what? Wednesday, May 21st. The day the devil was lit on fire, that fucking cocksucker right here. Bam! Butt fuck, the whole thing. It's pretty creepy. We have a little house like a stage for the devil getting buried and seen. But fuck that cocksucker. It's Wednesday. Get it together. Pick your socks up. Brush your teeth. Wash your ass. Polish your toenails. Do something. Get out there and stab a motherfucker. Ozzy Osbourne, 1969, dropping it on you like a fucking savage when he was John Osbourne. Hit it, Lee. Kick this motherfucker, Lee. If this don't get your heart pumping, nothing will. Last time I listened to this, I mugged the fucking shoeshine man. Let's do it. Fuck it. $18 is $18. I don't give a fuck. Hit it. What? Wiggle, Lee. This is it. Don't leave. What? Vapors, bong hits, heroin hits, whatever you got we need today. It's Wednesday. What? Kick it, Lee. Ba-ba-dum. You should be rolling that first fucking number right now. I don't give a fuck if you gotta go to work, you're in a rush, your mom's asshole's on fire. Everything in proportion. Light that fucking bong hit, it's over. What's up, dog? Lower the fucking music. What is this? A block party.
I was going to say, how much money can you possibly get from a shoeshine? $18.
$18, $19, whatever the fuck. It's the way to start the day. So, you know, I hit him with a shoe and fuck it. I left him there. What are you going to do? It's a beautiful fucking day to be alive. You're in it, cocksuckers. Get out there. Smile. Read a fucking book. Do something. It's better than just sitting there with a thumb up your ass waiting for fucking, you know, the Lucifer to show up with an opportunity. It ain't gonna happen, dog. It's 2014, cocksuckers. What's happening, Lee Syatt? You smiley motherfucker, you. What's going on here?
Nothing. I feel great. It's amazing. People always ask me how I can do this. I love doing this. I mean, when the alarm clock goes off, I'm like, eh. But as soon as I get here, it's always happening.
What fucking alarm clock? I haven't had an alarm clock go off in years. You just wake up. What the fuck? I got up at 3 and then I slept and the alarm clock went off.
What are you talking about?
It sounded like fucking death. When the alarm clock goes off, it's death. You ever get the alarm clock going off, you don't know where the fuck you are. You're like, what the fuck?
Well, that must happen to you with you being on the road so much.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Sometimes you wake up in the middle of the night and look, and it's not the pictures on your wall. That's how you could, you know what I'm saying? It's rough. But I'm home for 2 weeks. Had a good time yesterday. Met with Jessica. She's going to expedite the book. It was fucking great. I broke down while I was talking to her because I wanted to understand what I wanted this book to be, basically. You know, I want people to feel what I felt till I was 27, you know, because that's what I know people feel in general. What I felt was nothing different from what people feel, you know. When you're confused, you want to do something with your life, you got no help. You know, you don't even know what the fuck you want to do. That's the sad thing.
Yeah.
When you're at that age where you don't even know what the fuck you do, and you're scared to think about it for yourself, you know, and then it gets clearer. So I want to draw that picture. I really want to get that picture written well because I want people to read that and go, Jesus fucking Christ, you know what I'm saying? If this is what he was going through, I ain't going through dick. I ain't going through shit. You know, we always think of what we're going through is like the top, the worst thing. People go through shit every fucking day, you know, and people go through worse shit. You know, what are those girls, what are those fucking kidnapped girls going through? You know, those poor fucking African girls with flies on them, smelling shit on a farm right now, and you're worried about a fucking, you don't have the right nail color for your fucking toenails, you know. Sometimes you don't really put in perspective how lucky we are, you know. So that's it. What's up with you, cocksucker? Went to jiu-jitsu yesterday?
You did? Wow.
Yeah, I went to jiu-jitsu. I took some, I'll tell you, man, and it's hard to believe, I took Shroom Tech yesterday, and I went to jiu-jitsu. First off, today I feel fucking great. We were learning a move yesterday where it was like a guard retention, but my top leg goes over instead of the leg slicing, and I had to throw like 1,000 roundhouse kicks. We were drilling it, and I feel fucking great today. But while I was there, before I left, there was only two guys my size. One guy was sore from the night before, so I rolled with one guy, and 5 minutes was like nothing. I wasn't even fucking breathing heavy. I didn't have to tap, nothing. My air was flat, fine. After that, I did a couple more hip escapes. It's amazing how much, you know, some guy wrote today, maybe a nice guy, he goes, the vapors for you are almost as bad as the weed. I tell you what isn't as bad as the weed is the smoke. There's no more smoke coming into my lungs. And I'm going to tell you something right now. With all the little things I do, I knew that with the epileptical, with the fucking jiu-jitsu, and with the kettlebells on the timer, my cardio would increase and my breathing would get better. But I'll tell you what, guys, it didn't. And I knew that there was something going on. Either there was a vitamin I was deficient at, either there was one of my valves and my heart was fucked up, or I had to stop smoking. So I said, let me do the easiest one without getting the worst bad news. Let me stop smoking. And guys, the cardio has gone up, you know, 30-40%. You know, I'm not dying no more. I walk up the stairs now and I'm not fucking huffing and puffing just on a regular day. So it wasn't the vapor or anything, it was the smoke. The smoke was damaging my fucking lungs. 3, 4, 5 fucking years ago, I got a lung X-ray, and they told me I had the beginnings of emphysema. You could hear it. So what the fuck? You know what I'm saying? So you have to do something.
Yeah.
I want to live. I want to be around. I want to be able to go to the park with Mercy, you know, as you saw last night at fucking 8:30. It never ends. And she's in bed by 8 o'clock every night.
That's solid, what surprised you was there.
At 20 to 9, she was fucking dancing to Wally Kazam. At 9, she was dancing to Wally Kazam, and Lee was like, what the fuck is going on? There was people in the house. She's fucking moving. It's really amazing, huh, Lee?
Yeah, it was crazy. And you're fine doing jiu-jitsu with your knee? Because I know your knee is kind of fucking hurting you right now.
Well, I'll tell you what happened. My knee hurts, but what are my options? To sit in the house and milk and cry? So what I did was I found a way to work out without it fucking killing me. So I'll go, I'll stretch it out real well, I'll put a brace on it, and then when I get home, I elevate it. Last night, I took two Aleves, you know, when I got home. One Aleve to loosen the pain a little bit. What is this, a fucking earthquake again? That's all I need. I thought there was one last night. And I go every other day. Yesterday, I had nothing. And I just couldn't blow off another John Evan class, you know, on a Tuesday. Because usually I work out on Monday, so my Tuesday, my knee's kind of swollen. I go to fucking acupuncture. I went yesterday, and it was one of the best classes I went to. I laughed, you know, I huffed and puffed, I sweat. I went home, my gi was fucking wet. Once my gi is wet, that's what I go for. That's what I strive for my underwear being wet. I strive for my knee pads being sweaty. Then I know I sweat everywhere, you know, when you have somebody on top of you, you're sweating. But when I got home yesterday, I got bad news. I got a Facebook message from a girl in the doctor's office I'm very tight with. And she told me my knee was no bueno to call for an appointment ASAP because he wasn't in the office the rest of the week. So I called and made an appointment for Tuesday at 1. So let's see what really is going on with my knee. But you know what? I knew I needed something. Something is not right in there. I'm no doctor to tell you what's in there. It could be a variation of things. I'm walking. I've learned to deal with it. You learn to deal with it, you know. And you know that the more you sit down, when you have an injury like that, the more you sit and think about it, the worse it gets. And the best thing you could do is to give that injury blood. The more blood you give that injury to heal, you know, just a little stretch, just a little something that'll heal that injury. And I really believe that. You know, I was watching the UFC countdown with Robbie Lawler, and he fought the beard on a Saturday night for the championship, and that Monday he went to work out. And he said, I went to work out to get some blood in the muscles to relieve the soreness and the...
Jesus.
And sometimes it feels... My wrist was hurting Sunday and Monday. I went to jiu-jitsu yesterday. It doesn't hurt as much today. You give it blood. You exercise it. You know, there comes a point where you know what's excessive pain or it's too much, and you have to stop with this. Some things sometimes are just stiff because the muscle around it hard. You got to break that fucking seal and put some blood in that motherfucker, cocksucker. And that was it, my brother. That was it was a really non... I wrote some jokes. I play with, you know, when I come home on these weekends, I really enjoy them. I enjoy playing with Mercy and watching cartoons. And she loses her mind when fucking Wally Kazam comes on, doesn't she? She giggles by herself. She's been giggling over Wally Kazam by herself for 2 months. I mean, out loud. Me and my wife look at each other like, fucking Wally's that funny, but Wally is fucking funny. The little bird on there, it's fucking hilarious, that show. And the problem with Wally Kazam is there's only a couple fucking episodes, so she watches repeats. They only squeeze out like one episode every 2 fucking weeks. Like last week was Victor the fucking Villain. You know how many times I've watched Victor the fucking Villain since last week? I know it by fucking memory. She sits there looking at me like it's the first time every time, which is very, it's very, you know, it's great to see that. It's like the first time she hears a song.
That's so funny.
So, what the fuck, Lee?
I don't know. The vapor's got to me.
Sure, that's what they're supposed to do. I'm supposed to give you a little blood to your fucking blood vessel, to your fucking brain, cocksucker. What do you got planned today? You going to do some jumping jacks
tonight? Yeah, I'm looking at a couple apartments after this, and then Paula is coming over, but we've been talking. She just started working out, so we're going to go take a couple walks together and start doing that together. And
uh-oh.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
What are you going to work out at tonight?
Just go on some walks. No, I mean, she's been doing a DVD tape, so she's going to bring it. Maybe we'll try it out. Who knows?
Absolutely. And after what, you give her the high hard one? You get that monkey nice and sweaty. Oh my God.
She's been studying.
Like a savage.
Lady. She's been studying for 2 months, so it's been like maybe once a week I'll see her. So this weekend's going to be fun.
You're going to see her all weekend?
Yeah.
It's over. Huh? You're breaking out the robes. You're going to rub her feet. You're going to throw grapes.
I'm eventually going to have to get a robe, I guess.
Dog, you can't sit there in your underwear and you're fucking with no shirt on. It's embarrassing. If you put a robe on, you look fucking distinguished, like fucking Humphrey Bogart. You want to look like some mook or you want to look like Humphrey Bogart?
I guess I'm going to look like Humphrey Bogart.
Okay, then fucking get the robe. You put your name on it like a Jewish star. You get a couple of them so when you travel, people see the pride you have.
What am I going to do, walk around with it on at the airport?
Fuck it. Why not? If that's what it calls for. You know what I'm saying? Who walks around with a robe? Why be like everybody else? Be original.
Will you walk around too?
Why not?
Cuban flag on it.
Cuban flag, a picture of a fucking dick upside down, something, just to let these fucking people know who's running shit, you know what I'm saying?
Oh my. So it's pretty crazy that the book is coming together, because, I mean, when you think about it, you've been working on it for years.
Fucking years. Trying to figure out what's important.
We had the first guy call in a while ago.
Yeah, figure out what's important and what's not important. You know, I don't want to tell the stories that people know already. I want to tell more of the people of my state of mind. You know, and, it was fear. It was just fear. You know, you hit it on the head. You said you got to open up the chapter with that story after you got thrown out of the Benders walking down the hill to Ronnie's. You know what I was thinking? Like, this is not going to work. This is my second home that I'm living in. You know, I'm a senior in high school. I'm a junior in high school. You know, I'm working. I made every fucking mistake at that level. You know, I just did every stupid kid mistake there is, you know.
Do you think the way you... The childhood you had made it easier for you not to judge people? Because, like, thinking about it, just even going to jail, it's easy for me to, like, I judge a lot, like, this kid who I went to high school with who's been in and out of jail, and then, like, you start judging him, and, like, you really shouldn't, but, I mean, it's the easiest, it's kind of like the easiest thing to do is complain.
But when you judge, you're giving up. That's what you're doing. You're giving up on somebody. Listen, man, encouragement is the biggest thing you give somebody. You know, Sam Tripoli put out a CD last night.
Oh, cool.
And he put it out yesterday. It's number 3 right now. And I talked to him yesterday, you know, and he called and he was very humble. He goes, can you help me out? Can you tweet it? And it's funny how I'm really proud of Sam Tripoli. I really am in my heart, guys. I really fucking am. I still remember the night Sam walked into the fucking Comedy Store. One of the biggest lessons in comedy I got was from Sam one night when he went up there. He was a young kid, and he was up there talking about doing ecstasy with Chinese people and shit. And these fucking people were old, and they weren't getting them. And I'm in the back howling because of what the situation is. He's pitching it like he's a fucking Carnegie Hall.
Yeah.
He's fucking pitching these jokes like he's a Carnegie Hall, talking about ecstasy and jumping up and down the rave, and some chick sucked his dick, and blah, 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 blah. And these people were fucking 90, but it was the Comedy Store. It was dark, so he couldn't see it. He couldn't see the audience. Oh,
okay.
So do you understand? I've seen what Sam Tripoli's done. When you, you know, you see all these people that want to come into this town and be fucking pirates. They want to be talent pirates. They want to come into this town and make this shit happen. And in 3 years, they fucking, not even 2 years, they're gone.
Yeah.
They're gone, you know. And I saw this millions of fucking time. So to see somebody like Sam Tripoli come here, you know, he opened for Pablo for a while, whatever. He went on to do his own thing. Sam, you know, he's part of Death Squad. He goes to, you know, he did the podcast with Joey yesterday. He's at the store. You know, Sam's out there banging every night. I like these guys that try to contact me. And they either want to go on the road or do the podcast or do this. I know they're doing it half-ass. They're doing everything fucking half-ass.
Right.
And in a way, I feel bad because I'm not helping them. But what would my help do? What would this fucking podcast do for them? Give them a couple things. They're going to keep doing the same habits they've been doing. When you see somebody who's out there, you know, Sam still does the fucking naughty show. Sam has a fucking podcast on Playboy. Sam has this. Sam has that. You know, and I was just really proud of him, man. And I could hear it in his voice saying, Joey, thank you. That's encouragement. You know, I'm a firm believer that, listen, if you go up to somebody and go, hey, man, I have an idea. I want to rob a bank and shoot the teller in the head. Don't encourage me. You know what I'm saying? Don't go, that's a great fucking idea, Joey. But if somebody comes to you and goes, Lee, can I talk to you about something from heart to heart? Because I know it's happened to people that listen to this podcast. Listen, man, this fucking job I got here, it pays okay, but I'm not happy. I think I want to be a fucking printer. I think I want to go back to school and be a printer and print brochures and open up my own business. There's some people that look at you and go, you know what, you're a 43-year-old fucking loser. What are you going to do with your life? Those people, it's the person who looks you in the eye and goes, listen, bro, it's going to be rough, but I believe in you. I believe in you, man.
Yeah.
Go for it. And they give you a hug and we have a Snapple and everybody goes home. But that little thing, that's huge encouragement. Encouragement from your family, which sometimes you don't get. You
yeah.
know what I'm saying? Because they think they care about you. They want you to be secure. They want you to get the definite route, the high percentage career, which is going to school and getting a job. That's high percentage. Not anymore, though.
Yeah.
Not in this society. Not anymore. It's not guaranteed. You know, Paul is very lucky. She's going to go to law school and do this and you know, get a job. She's probably going to get she's got an internship this summer, which pays at the DA's office.
No, it doesn't pay. And but the crazy thing is she's not guaranteed. There's someone in her law school class who's 40 something now, just because there were no jobs. But I read articles all the time how a lot of law schools, like some girl was actually suing her law school because they promised, like, she felt like she didn't get the job she was supposed to
but
get.
But was that girl going out at every fucking day?
Oh,
was,
yeah,
did she do it?
Yeah.
You know, this I could give you the fucking horse. If you don't get on it and fucking do 90 miles an hour, what good is it having a fucking horse?
Right.
You follow me? There's people that. You know, there's people that do not know. You know, you and I are learning a valuable lesson that the gift of hustling is not a gift everybody has. Not everybody had a Sticky Charlie in their fucking life. Not everybody has those opportunities. Not everybody knows how to put those opportunities together. I was talking to Jessica yesterday, and I was talking to her about when I used to rob the gas stations. You know, how I never robbed a gas station with a fucking gun. I drove around, I saw a gas station that needed help wanted. Okay, number one, I had a buddy who worked at a gas station. So he gave me the names of people who got fired from the gas station for stealing.
Okay.
I would take their names and I would go into a gas station. I would give a phony address and a phony phone number to a payphone. That I would hustle. I would look around and drive around, look for fucking payphones or walk around. And then I would go into this gas station when he was busy. Most of the shifts in the gas station they're looking for are not 9 to 5. They're 4 to 12 or 12 to 8 in the morning.
Jesus.
They're dying to fill those jobs. Because guess who's working that shift until you find somebody? You. You got 3 kids. You got 2 other gas stations. You know, you got a wife. You got a girlfriend. You got to order the gas. You got to order the... You follow me?
Yeah.
So I come in. I look decent. And I go, hi, I'm looking for a job. What position are you looking for? 4 to 12. Can you start today? I knew I had them. Even though I put the name... on the fucking, even though I put the name on the application and the address and the fight phone number, I gave it to the guy. The guy told me come back at fucking 4. Even if he called the gas station and got a reference, we gave the name to the manager. So they would call the gas station and ask for my buddy. You follow me? And my buddy would say, by the way, when you call for the reference next time, it's this such and such. We didn't even do it that way. I gave my buddy a different name. So if my buddy's name was James, I gave him Louis. I forget what the name was. So if they did call for a reference, I would always go for a job when he was working. He would give them a reference, and then they'd say, who am I speaking with? And he'd say, the owner, Lee Syatt. So bam, I had the job and the reference. You understand me? Jesus. So now I went in
there. You're the whole reason there's background checks now.
Right. I went in there at 3:30. Jersey and Portland, Oregon are the only states that you have to pump gas. That's an attendant has to pump gas. So what I would do is I would go in there at 3:30, do the necessary paperwork, put my gas pumping suit on, and I would work 4 to 12. You know how many cars start coming in at 4:30?
Thousands.
Thousands. And I would get a gas station that was strategically close to a turnpike. So people would have to stop in there and get fucking gas. You know, I remember getting a job out of the turnpike gas station one time. I made a fucking $1,200.
Oh, the ones that are on the gas station?
On the fucking turnpike. Like, I took one of those down one time. And it was hysterical how I would go, work 3 hours, get $2,000-$3,000, and then call George and one of my other friends to just pick me up. And I tell them, super, that I had, or whoever, that I had to fucking go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
I'd get my fucking gas pumping suit off. I'd walk to the car, I'd get in the car, and I'd leave with $3,000.
Did you, like, keep a notebook? Like, okay, I can't go to this gas station ever again. I just knew it because I
didn't do the gas stations in my neighborhood. You don't shit where you sleep.
Okay.
I would drive 30, 40 fucking miles to white gas stations that didn't, that I would never see again. And you don't shit where you sleep. You don't shit in your neighborhood. This is your neighborhood. You never cause a problem. And even I had that education, I still fucked up in 87 when I had the credit card at the mall in Boulder. Same thing. You never shit where you sleep. You go to the malls outside the area.
Did you ever get, like, anxiety doing it? Like, after, as you were leaving, like, you never, like, anytime a siren went by, you weren't like, oh. Like, just hearing about it makes me nervous.
I was always scared. Now, walking around scared is one thing. Smoking a joint on top of fear is another.
Oh, my God.
So at the end of the night, I would go to my hotel, wherever the fuck I was staying, my friend's house. I'd be high, and in the middle of the high, that thought would come into my mind that I robbed a gas station today. And I put together in my mind all the possible scenarios and how they could catch me. And my heart would beep, and I'd get scared, because there's always a fuck-up. In every crime, there's a fuck-up. There's too many variables. There's too many steps. You always do something wrong. That's why the cops try to retrace your steps and grab one of those steps.
Did they not have cameras back then?
No. Not like now.
Jesus.
Not like now. In those days, they probably had a camera on the register and the guy who was taking the change, but not on the gas station.
Fuck. And that's another crazy thing we were talking about last night, about the money you were making and how you put the rest up your nose. Like, so if you robbed $3,000 in a couple hours, me, as the Jew, be like, oh, okay, I can get an apartment. You're still living in your friend's house. You're like, okay, I have $3,000, hundreds for food.
First of all, let's say I was living with George and I made $3,000, I give him $500 off the bat.
Okay.
So I had George. Anything I needed, I had George. I didn't just give him $50. I gave him a nickel. Bam, take a nickel. So that's $2,500. I'd probably buy some clothes, go for a nice steak dinner, talk some shit, and I'd buy like an 8-ball or two.
So I'd be gone in like a day.
3 days.
Jesus.
And then I'd start all over again. Then there'd be another mind fuck. I'd go borrow $500 from a loan shark, give him 8 weeks, and then go pay the fucking 8 weeks. So it was fucking amazing. I lived my life, my heart beating every fucking minute. That's how I used to live my life. That's why when I moved to Colorado, I slept for 3 weeks straight in 93. I thought it was because I was getting acclimated. You get acclimated to the altitude, but no. It was because the stress level in my life, you know, just running. When you're running and fucking gunning like that.
Yeah, I was watching one of those jail shows, and they brought in like a homeless guy who was on drugs, and they said he was like acting up, so they put him in like a cell by himself, and they said, well, he'll be asleep, he'll sleep it off, like, and they said like that's sometimes the best sleep they get is in jail, because they don't always have to be looking over their shoulder, which was crazy for me to even think about, like the best sleep you'll get is in prison.
They don't have air conditioning. You know, they have a little cool. I mean, they maintain it cool. You're not going to sweat all fucking.
No, but I'm just saying, like, you don't have to, like, keep looking over your shoulder.
No, I'm just a joke. It's a joke, cocksucker.
I'm too far. I'm dialed in here, cocksucker.
You need to take some more vape hits. Jesus Christ. You need a couple vape hits to get your fucking day going. But it's just really weird how I did that for a long time and never fucking flinched late. And I must have done 15 of them in fucking 3 months. 15 of those fucking things in 3 months. And they can never, you know, what are you going to fucking do, man? It was just a part of growing up. You follow Jesus. Me? That's what the book is going to be, you know. I mean, like I said, I want the people to understand what I went through from 79 to 85, which was fucking every emotion, every fucking fear possible. You know, it's like when you see the Godfather and Michael's about to shoot Sollozzo and the fucking police captain. You know, I've always said it, when he walks out of that, before he walks out of the bathroom, there's a train stopping, screeching its brakes, mm-hmm. but at the same time, it's him going deaf. You know, it's that screeching sound, like you just hear, like your heart and your heart, your adrenaline, everything gets to this fucking level where they just don't connect anymore. It's like an equalizer.
Yeah.
You know what an equalizer is? Your mind, you're about to do something bad. Your mind knows it. Your heart knows it. Your soul knows it. Your heart's fucking beating. Your adrenaline's up. You know, it's this fucking feeling. You're a hunter. You're a fucking hunter, and you're hunting a human, or you're about to do something fucking bad. You don't know what the level of height is in that.
I don't, yeah.
You have no idea. It's bigger than jungle. Just me thinking about it, I get scared sometimes. Like, just the level of waiting for somebody in an alley, you know, about to take, you know, kicking a drug dealer's door. You know, like, remember, when I kicked a drug dealer's door in, I wasn't fucking turning alarm systems off or windows off. I cased the building. I knew what was going on. I cased the apartment. I knew who was walking in and out at one time, and I knew I had a short fucking window. You know, sometimes things happen so fast that you don't even have a chance to react, and they happen so fast that you have to ask yourself, what the fuck just happened?
Jesus.
And that's what I wanted to do. That was when I robbed something, that was the illusion. You were going to hear two doors kick down, boom, boom, and I was going right for the thing, picking it up, taking it, and getting the fuck out of there. You were going to go, what the fuck just happened? You don't know how many times I did a crime. Well, I busted a door down into a drug dealer's house, and when I walked out of that drug dealer's house, the people in the hallway were looking. I'd go into your old building, and I'd kick your fucking door down.
Yeah.
I'd sit outside real nice until somebody, who are you waiting for? My friend, for some reason, his phone's busy. They let me in the building, that's it. Right there, once I got in the elevator, I knew the path to your apartment. I knew the door. I knew exactly where I was going in there. I was no hesitation. I would maybe knock one time. If I didn't hear nothing, boom! I kick the fucking door down, go into the room.
Jesus.
Fucking take whatever the coke was and get the fuck out of there. I wouldn't run.
Because you look suspicious?
Yeah, I would just walk out like it was just minding my own, like I was giving out votes.
Did you ever case a place and like go in and expect something and find like nothing?
Nothing.
What's that feel like?
Like a fucking jack off.
Jesus.
But because I was dealing with drug dealers, I always knew when they were picking up. You know, like I would buy coke from you for a month, and you would tell me, man, I'm waiting for my guy. He hasn't dropped off anything. You know, he's going to drop off a fucking kilo in an hour. You got a fucking kilo. Even if you got 20 customers, I know I'm going to get a half a kilo the next day. We'll sit out there on a roof 2 miles, not even a block away, with fucking binoculars, wait for you to leave. You know, I love these, you know, and there's little things that drug dealers did. You know, that I know they're not going to stick to their schedule. They pick up a girl. That's it. Their schedule's done. Their apartment's wide open.
Okay.
There's so many things. You know, that's why you love the drug dealer that goes out and gets high. That's the one you attack. Okay. The weakest out of all of them. You don't attack the drug dealer that's always thinking that. You attack the guy that does his product.
Okay.
So he could be out and he could stay out for fucking a day. You got a day to ransack his fucking place. There was just so many.
Did you ever, like, have, like, a girlfriend and be like, okay, go to a bar. I know he's at this bar. Distract him. Give me some time.
I didn't have a girlfriend, but I knew we had friends. It was funny. You mentioned that. I was telling Jessica yesterday that in 85, I saw this girl that I used to hang out with. Never slept with her. She was a girlfriend of a dear, dear, dear friend of mine, but she had more balls than he did. I had done some crimes with him.
Yeah.
But he was still, like, legit, like, kind of. She wanted to make money. She liked taking motherfuckers down.
Jesus.
So if I said to her, hey, find out what this guy's doing or whatever, I could give her like a week and a half. It was funny because yesterday I was having a conversation about a gentleman named Tommy Kenny. Tommy Kenny was somebody I bumped into later on in my life. I bumped into him and I became dear friends with him maybe like in 81 and a half. I became friends with Tommy Kenny through the DiLorenzos. Tommy Kenny was an Irish gangster over in the city. He ran with the Westies. He was older now.
Mm-hmm.
He owned a few businesses and whatnot. But Tommy knew people and he knew thieves. And before I went to Colorado, I became friends with him because I would always bring jewelry over to his friend in bulk. I was getting jewelry in bulk in those days, and I would bring it to his friend to fence.
Okay.
You know, so one day he asked me, he goes, you get great stuff. We were talking, blah, blah, blah. And we became friends. He goes, you want to help me from time to time? Kenny was in on insurance crimes that everybody was in on. So he'd tell me, like, you got a job. You're going to go to a warehouse, and you're going to work as a warehouseman for a month. And just watch what time the manager goes in and out of that box. You know what I'm saying? In those days, like, he taught me so much. He taught me, like, when you break into a safe, you don't break into a safe. You take the safe home. So you go into those places with a fucking goat dolly.
Yeah.
And you take the safe home. Because when I'm there robbing the safe, I only got an hour. When I'm home, I got 15 hours. Eventually, I'll bust that thing and blow it up with a fucking stick of dynamite.
Do these people still exist? Like, I can't imagine, like, you meet a guy who's going to get you a job with insurance and going to have you go work at a warehouse. Like, are these people walking around still doing this? Jesus.
It's in a different level now. Why rob people at home on a computer right now trying to figure out how to write PayPal accounts?
Yeah, that's true.
How to rob, you know, union pensions. You know, it's more, it's become different. But there's still old school guys like myself that this is what they do for a living. They're not going to fucking change now. You know, you don't get worse at what you do. A criminal doesn't get worse at what he does. He gets better if he's intelligent.
Okay.
With me, once you go to prison, that's college. Now you start talking to people who specialize in your trade.
I was thinking, you've said that before. I was thinking about that the other day. They specialize in it, but they got caught. So isn't it like taking a bad college course?
So if I tell you to come this way, right, now you got caught going that way. Now you know you're never going to go that way again.
Okay.
You're going to take that path over there and go out through that door. Once you get caught, it makes you strong. It's like being a kid when your mother punishes you.
Okay.
You learn that you can't run that scam no more. I got to do something completely different now. So when you go to prison, now you're talking to four or five different people that are doing what you were doing. You follow me? So you get five different perspectives. Now it becomes Jeet Kune Do. Now it becomes five different styles. You follow me? You learn. You know, when I got real locked up, I'm not proud to talk about this shit, but I'll tell you one thing that I learned a lot about cops and how they do their procedures. I learned how the feds work. I learned how the local government works. I learned how they send undercover at you. I learned what amounts they go for. I learned what the process is. A DA wants a couple of arrests to get a conviction.
Okay.
You know, I can't just come to me and go, hey, you know anybody's got 2 ounces of blow? And all of a sudden I put them on to Lee and they just buy 2 ounces and make a... They're going to buy two or three multiple fucking deals to get a conviction. It's a stronger...
Okay.
So you can't fucking plea bargain. You know, I know how they show up. I know that, you know, it's funny, like when you watch shows like Miami Vice and all these other drug shows, when drug cops show up and you take a kilo out, they look at it and test it and go, this is good, pay the man. They got to do it. You know, I don't do shit with nobody who don't do something. Very seldom in my circle did I deal with people that didn't do blow, who make some losers because the real drug dealers don't do their product. But you're not going to sell to somebody the first time 10, 20 kilos to a guy who doesn't do it.
Well, don't you think the undercover cops know that and they just do it? And
they do it. No shit. They do blow. They drink. They eat pussy. They eat ass. They carry a gun.
So don't you need?
They got to act like you to establish trust.
So don't you need a different way to establish? Like, if you're gonna assume that an undercover cop knows this, don't you need another way to figure out who you're gonna sell to?
No. What I'm trying to tell you is that I don't want America to think that when a cop comes up to you, it's all fucking legit and with a white suit, and that drug dealer is that stupid that he doesn't know it's an undercover fucking cop. Okay. We could spot these motherfuckers. What you do is when you see somebody, you close your eyes and you put a blue suit on them. If that fucking blue suit fits, they're a fucking cop, okay, Lee? That's how you look at it. Okay. You could tell who's in your realm and who's not in your realm.
Jesus.
When I was doing all that shit, knock on wood, I never sold to an undercover cop. Really? And I spotted them a mile away because at my mother's bar.
Okay.
I learned from being a kid at my mother's bar, being in Harlem.
So let's run through it. I come up
first
to you.
Of all, if you're a Studio City cop, you're not going to be an undercover cop in Studio City. You're going to be an undercover cop in Visalia.
Okay, we got a call coming.
All right. Who's this?
Who do you think it is?
You're a minute early, cocksucker. How are you, Rudy Moreno?
Hey, good morning, Joe Diaz.
Nothing. I'm schooling these motherfuckers on crime. You know how undercover cops work. Like, if a cop is an undercover cop in Studio City, he's not in Studio City. They send him to Whittier to make guys. And if a guy's a Whittier cop, they send him to Studio City so they're not shitting in their own backyard. And how, you know, on television, they show these cops that they come to you and they go, yeah, I want to buy an ounce of blow. And you just sell them the ounce of blow. They don't do a line in front of you. They don't talk to you about Carlos Santana. They don't do a shot of tequila. That's only on fucking TV. You know, I had a fucking guy tell me a story how he shot coke and heroin with an undercover cop for 9 months. That the guy was shooting right with him every fucking day. But he couldn't figure out why he couldn't get a fast and speedy trial. Because they had to clean the cop up. They took him a year and a half to give him a trial because they had to clean the cop up. You know, he couldn't figure it out. And then when he was sitting in there for a year and a half, the attorney goes, you're right. The stories you're talking about that cop were correct. He was he's cleaning up. So now, you know, when in those situations. But, you know, I don't want America to think that undercover cops are the nicest people in the world. Vice cops, undercover cops, they get their dick sucked. They do everything alone because the only way you establish trust is if you do something. I heard about a cop stabbing a guy with a friend of mine one time. He was a cop. My friend ended up doing 6 years. Guy stabbed the cop. Who are they going to believe? Damn. The cop or my friend? You with me? Anyway, enough with the criminal talk. Rudy Moreno, one of the fathers of fucking Latino comedy, period. In L.A., in fucking Scandinavia, in Bogota. I'm going to get something out in the open right here about Rudy Moreno that I want people to know. Without Rudy, I wouldn't be where I was. The story was Rudy used to book the Brave Bull from like 96 on. The Brave Bull was a hot little club in Whittier. Not Whittier.
What was it? San Gabriel.
San Gabriel. And it had fucking 19 rooms. One room had a moose head. A fucking Mexican bull. They had a couple of bitches that didn't pay their vig. I mean, it was fucking amazing. And when I got here, they said, you got to call Rudy. And I kept calling Rudy, and Rudy wouldn't fucking call me back. And one night I just showed up down there. I'm fucking Joey Diaz. You're going to put me up. And I had to follow Tommy Slade.
Remember Tommy Slade? Who was that? The detective. That the guy that used to do the detective thing?
Yes. You know, I like
that. He was 80 years old then.
Oh my God. And I remember that I went up one night and I did a set and I did great. And Matt Woods was there with Brian Dunkelman.
And I remember that.
Yeah, Matt Brian Woods.
He went out to do American Idol. Lost the,
And I remember that Matt Woods came up to me and he goes, man, I remember I was going to kill Matt Woods in Denver for for picking me apart.
You want to kill him?
Oh, Rudy, you know when somebody comes up to you and asks you why you're doing comedy, you're wasting your time, you're talented, but you're not doing it right. This guy came up to me at an open mic and said to quit. He's like, he just quit because you're not committing to this. You're the funniest guy in the room, but you're not committing to this, so quit. He goes, people got to work hard at this. You show up down here. And he really hurt my feelings, Rudy. I was going to fucking knock him out, but he wasn't lying, Rudy.
Right.
Sometimes people tell you something, they're not lying. You know, you can't fucking be mad at somebody for telling you the truth. So I walked away from him, and he walked in that night in the Brave Bull as I was on stage doing my thing. And he goes, bro, you made me very proud. I hugged him, and, you know, we were friends forever after that. But that's what happened at the Brave Bull. And then, you know, the Comedy Store pays $15. You know, everybody pays $15. And for a while there, for like a year, you would book me every weekend as dirty as I was. In the back room where they sold tacos in the Brave Bull. Remember they had three or four different comedy shows. You would always put me in the back.
Yeah, every week they'd move the room, man.
That's where Marilyn Martinez started the war. Remember,
when they had the room with the pool table, people were playing pool. We were doing comedy.
Oh my God, I forgot about that one. And then I was there the night. Who was the fucking comic that fell in love with the transvestite? Remember, he was dating a transsexual. He was an old time comic. And what? You ready? You're gonna remember. You and me did a gig at the Brave Bull, and you paid us extra to go to some congressmen's and do a benefit. So you said, as soon as you get off the stage at the Brave Bull, I'm giving you an extra $50. Come over there. And all of us showed us. Raul Martinez. Remember, he left.
Who was the transvestite?
Remember, he was dating a transvestite before he left.
Oh, that's right.
Remember, he was on drugs. They were doing crack or heroin or something. And he fell in love with a transvestite.
I remember all this shit, man.
Dog, because it was the funniest thing. Because I remember him coming up to me going, fuck.
I wonder if Raul's still alive.
He was eating a transvestite's ass. He don't live too long after that. Transvestites got a special taste in their nutsack. It's confusion.
Good Joe, you're out of your mind, man. No, I think Raul's passed. There's a lot of people that passed since then, man.
Who else passed? Oh, Vic Dunlop. Oh my God, Mariano Martinez.
Dante Garza. I don't know if you remember Dante Garza. Yeah, big heavy set cat from Texas.
Yeah, and Dante Garza.
Dante Garza, Marilyn, of course, the lovely Marilyn, man. Marilyn, Freddie Soto, there's a lot of guys.
It was just, it's been a long time, Rudy. And now you got the Ice House, you're celebrating the 15
years. Yeah, we've been there forever, man. Well, we were at the Ice House in 91, but just sparingly. We just, they'd give us a shot every once in a while. That's where we were working, places like the Brave Bull and shit, because the clubs weren't allowing us to come in, man. You know? And, I think Bob Fisher was one of the earlier owners that said, yeah, well, we'll give you guys a shot and see what you guys can do. And after a while, you let one Latino in there, the rest is fucking coming. So
the Ice House is a great spot. We do a podcast there. You do your show there every Wednesday. I mean, we always work hand in hand on Wednesdays.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that you showcase all, you've had from George Lopez, Gabriel, Felipe.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, everybody's gone through there, it's just an amazing
thing. We had a lot
thing.
Of come through there, man,
Oh, Roseanne Barr. I mean, no. You see it on the thing, but it's just amazing, Rudy, that first of all, I've been here 17 years. I've been your friend through all the casinos. I taught you. You paid me with a check. I'd fucking be pissed at you because I needed it for cake money. I remember one night you had an Irish pub.
An Irish pub.
In front of a porn place. In front of a porno
that.
Place.
That was in the
city of
industry. Right next door to a strip joint.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I went down there broke as fuck. And I needed to get high in the worst way. And you said, come on down and I'll take care of half your problem. You know what I'm saying? I'll scratch an itch for you. At least you get a quarter gram out of it. And I went down there on a Wednesday night. And when I'm up on stage, some drunk guy throws his wallet at me. Just throws his wallet at me. I catch it out of the air. And I'm holding on to the wallet. And he goes, God, he's drunk. He's like, go ahead, go buy a drink, you fat fuck, whatever. And I finished my set, and I had to walk into the bathroom anyway. And as I was walking into the bathroom, I opened up his wallet, and he had a stack of 100 and a couple 50s, and I took 100, and I gave him back the wallet. Fucking tremendous.
That shit never happens to me, man.
Rudy Moreno.
It never happens to me.
Now, you started comedy here in Los Angeles. What year?
1991.
Jesus, that's when I started, July of 91.
Yeah, it was August. I was a month after you, man. August of 91.
And who was there with you?
Well, at first I was just working. I was working with a band. I was working with the band Tierra here in L.A. and just opening for them. And then ran into Gilbert Esquivel, Gil, man. So Gilbert Esquivel and I went to this church and we thought everybody spoke Spanish because everybody was standing there with sombreros and big buckles and shit. And Gilbert and I flipped the coin to see who goes first to do the gig in Spanish. So Gil goes up there and says, he's struggling, man, So he's doing his stuff in Spanish, and it was my turn. So I walked up, and the first thing I said, does anybody speak English? Everybody rolls their hand. So it was from there. And then Gilbert says, you ever been to the Comedy Store? He says, on Latino night. I said, fucking Latino comics, man. It's only me and you and George and Paul.
So Paul and George were around then. Did you know them then? Did you see them around? No.
No, I just knew of them. You know? But we went to the comedy store, man. There was 100 cats, you know, all Latinos that were working in there. You know, guys, not all of them are around still, but, you know, everybody was in there, man. Guys like Luke Torres and Raul Martinez was there. Marilyn was there. So that just woke up a whole thing about, you know, not because you don't know. Nobody knew that there was Latino comics out there, or that, you know, they would brand us separately.
Where was where was my man Danny Mora at the time?
Danny Mora was there. Yeah, Danny Mora was teaching comedy classes to everybody that was new there. And Danny Mora's still around, man.
No shit. I get a call from him every once in a while, man.
Yeah, he's, you know, I saw Danny about 5 years ago. He was telling me he was dying from some intestinal thing. And then he showed up the next week and did 20 minutes, so.
Yeah, no, Danny Mora will never fucking die. He's one of those guys.
Yeah, right?
He's bulletproof. There'll be a nuclear war.
Yeah. So, him and Roaches, man.
Him and fucking Roaches. And Pops.
Yeah.
Little Pops. You can't kill Pops. Pops is a bad motherfucker. So, all right, now what year was this at the store, my brother, when all this was going on with you and Gilbert and Marilyn? What year was this?
This is 92, 93.
Now, when did the first show with Jeff Valdez start? The first show. What was the name of that show? Comedy
that
Compadres.
Your best friend?
Right.
That was Comedy Compadres.
Okay,
1993.
Were you on that at all?
I'm sorry?
Were you on that show at all?
Yeah, I got on that show.
Okay, who was on?
Yeah, he walked up over at the Laugh Factory and said, "You know, here's where I thought I had made it. I was going to do a TV show." Okay, my first gig was, my second gig was with Paul Rodriguez, and the third was with the Temptations. So I figured, well, shit, I'm on my way, man. And then Jeff came up and said he wanted to do a TV show. You know, little did I know that shit like this doesn't last, you know? So I did Jeff's show, and then Culture Clash had a TV show on Fox at the same time, in the same year. So I did both those shows. And I'm thinking, well, shit, I'm on my way, man. But, you know, here I am.
Doesn't matter, you were there.
The Comedy Combatus was kind of like a launch pad for a show that he did with Showtime in 96 for Latino Laugh Festival over in San Antonio. So, you know.
Now, before the Latino Laugh Festival, there was a show on HBO that they did 6 episodes of. What was the name of the Spanish show they did?
That one I don't remember, man.
Remember what I'm talking about? Pablo did it. Carlos did it. A couple guys did it. They did 6 episodes of an HBO show of Latin comics.
Oh, I don't know. I wasn't on that show, so I don't remember. But I remember now. I know what you're talking about.
Then John Leguizamo came out with his show in 95 on Fox called, what the fuck was the name of that
Something
show?
Something Buggin'.
Yeah, House of Buggin'.
Yeah.
Fox was brand new. They just gave him 6 episodes or something like that.
Right, right.
So then, when did the Laugh Factory start doing their Latin night?
I'm going to say that about 92. About 92 or so. And they're still doing it.
Right.
Monday nights.
Right. No, no. They mixed it with Arab night now.
Oh,
so it's Arab-Mexican night. They're together. They put the Arabs in the top tier and the... So they'll have like George, Sebastian, a couple guys. Then all of a sudden, a fucking
amazing,
snake
man.
Will come out with a snake will come out with a small guy with shoes with curls on him, and it becomes a different fucking thing. Jamie's jumping up and down. Everybody's happy.
So before Arab night, it was good. So it started around that time. Yeah. And there was a handful of guys, man. It was myself, Willie Barcena, Jeff Garcia, Carlos Oscar, Gilbert Esquivel. Yeah, and we were there every week because we were the only guys that they were letting us, you know, let us do time up there. And then they got us to do every other week, you know. So we go get our $10 and we're thinking that we're kicking ass because we're on Sunset. But I don't know, man. There's a lot of work in this game, you know what I mean? You're doing great.
Yeah, but no, I'm taking it away. That started in 97. I was in Seattle. I was up on stage, and Jeff Valdez walked up to me. And he says, "We're doing a show that fits your whatever, blah, 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 Latino Laugh Festival. we're going to send you a plane ticket. Come on down to L.A. and showcase on a Monday night. So I came down. They put me up second, and I ate the dick of death. And I went back to L.A., but I met somebody named Marilyn Martinez that night. That was very cool of me. And she walked me over to the Comedy Store after that. And I just stood there at the Comedy Store, and I went back to Seattle. So when I came back a year later, not even, 6 months later, I moved back here. One of the reasons I moved back here was they were doing comedy at the Improv now with the fucking little Cuban guy. And I'm like, put a suit on. What was that fucking knucklehead's name? God bless his soul. He's dead now. He had the wife that was black. John Mercedes.
John Mercedes, goddamn, man.
This is John
Mercedes. He just died.
And John Mercedes had the fuck. Remember his big claim to fame? He was somebody's manager in the fucking 60s.
Yeah, he was the chick from Dallas.
Yeah, I was her manager Dallas, in the 70s.
The blonde chick.
And then he discovered Ernie G. And the G Brothers. That was his big idea to take us into the 20th millennium with the Latino comedy, was the G Brothers comedy show.
So many people, man, and so many different personalities, because I remember everybody was doing the... None of us thought to do comedy. We would just do this. You know, white people do this, and Mexicans, we do this. And white people do this, and, you know, that was the thing, because we were just bouncing off of each other, because none of us had material or anything. Then you show up. You showed up with a whole different fucking flavor, man, you know? This was this Cubano cat who sounded Italian, and had the whole East Coast thing going on, man, and it was fucking refreshing, you know. Because I don't know, when you tell a story, Joe, you tell a story, and in the middle of the story, you'll throw something else in there that has completely nothing to do with the story.
You gotta do that.
I was kicking the shit out of this guy, and I'm stabbing him in the neck with a fucking pencil, and I'm watching Dora the Explorer in the back. I got fucking balloons, the whole thing, you know. But I'm sticking this guy in the fucking blood all over the place, you know. So that was different comedy altogether, man. So, I think that's why your success has been different than a lot of the guys, you know, because a lot of the guys are still doing the same old shit. And when you get up there, man, you know.
Rudy, it's hysterical because you've made me laugh many a times, but the things that we've had fun at is just the situations at clubs. How many times you come up to me and say, Joey, there's people here, you got to be a little clean tonight. And you look at me, and I look at you, and you know.
20 fucking years I've been asking you that.
It's not
going to happen. Rudy, don't worry about it. I got it. You know, and you just like to torture me, man, because you like to see me turn red, and, you know, fucking eyes roll up in the back of my head.
Oh no, because people come up to you and they say you can't perform here no more, and it was just a. But it's amazing how this is all we know, and people think that Rudy. People think at home or whatever. I don't know what they think comedians do. That we sleep all day and we just get up on stage all night. And I've known you for 17, 18 years, man, and I see that you work every day. I work every fucking day. It's not just, you know, making people laugh. There's a lot of work in between that goes with it, you know. And
Absolutely. And, it's not, I always tell these young cats, look, man, it's not like when you go into the mail room and you end up being the CEO after 20, 25 years, you know. It doesn't work like that. There's no promotion in this thing. And you got to just work your ass off. Maybe you get a shot. Maybe you get lucky, you know. There's a zillion comics out there, man. You know, and good comics, and then there's other comics that are just fucking lucky.
There's a zillion doctors. There's a zillion lawyers. You have to do something to stick out. You know, George did it. Paul did it. Carlos did it. You know, Johnny Sanchez stuck out for a while. I mean, we've all had success in different realms. I remember going into an audition for fucking the hottest Spanish show at the time, Kingpin.
Right.
That was going to be the hottest show. They gave it to Stephen Bauer. It was about drug cartels. And I remember them sending me the sides and me looking at it. I mean, this is the relationship me and Rudy have. And I had to go to, the thing was up in Ventura, an audition in Ventura. It was a white lady who was uptight.
And I remember
walking into her office and going, listen, before I even read this, you're looking for Rudy Moreno. And she goes, what?
Wow.
She goes, what are you talking about? I go, listen, I could read you this and make you laugh, but the guy that you want for this is Rudy Moreno. And she looked at me and she goes, I've never been in this situation before. Where an actor has walked in and told me who to book. And I go, you're looking for Rudy Moreno. Don't waste your fucking time. And she took Rudy's name down, and sure enough, Rudy booked this fucking part in Kingpin, But not only that, he fucking stole the scene. He called the Chinese guy a pinche chino on national television. Nope, not even Edward James Olmos did that. You understand me on Miami Vice? Because there was an episode where Edward James Olmos fights the Thai people. He didn't call him a pinche chino when he had the knife and he was doing the stick fighting. You called the fucking Chinese guy a pinche chino on national television from 8 to 10 o'clock. And they left it in there.
Yeah.
But that's how strong our friend, you know, that's how weird this system is. And there's a lot of times I get auditions and I tell the people, it's Rudy. You're looking for fucking Rudy, man. You're wasting your time with me. But it's amazing that Rudy got on this fucking national show, Kingpin, because I told the lady, I go, you're wasting your time. This is a national TV show, people, not some fucking WGN or some fucking TBS. This is a show that comes on at 8 o'clock, and I walked in there and told the lady she had to hire Rudy. And next thing you know, Rudy was the fucking guy.
Get that, man.
No, but it wasn't even about that. I'm not saying it in that. I'm saying it in a way that,
I know.
You know, you hear all these stories about, you know, the other day they had this thing on that was huge. You know, didn't Brad Pitt throw a beer to Matthew McConaughey?
Yeah.
The other day, and they made a big deal about it. First off, fucking Brad Pitt was a pot smoker. All of a sudden, that chick with 9 kids make him drink beer, whatever the fuck it is. But just the fact, you and I both know that when Brad Pitt looks at Matthew McConaughey, he goes, look at that punk-ass bitch. And when Matthew McConaughey looks at fucking Brad Pitt, he goes, look at that punk-ass bitch with that bitch running his life. You know, because they're in the same category when it comes to acting. Good-looking white dude. They're both in the same fucking category. They go up against each other head to head. There's got to be a little animosity between them. Hey, man, pal, and they threw a beer at him.
Right.
That's one part of Hollywood that I've never, like when you see George Clooney hanging out with Matt Damon, they're giggling. Do they call each other? Do they check up on each other? Do their kids play together? Do they share orgy pictures? That's bullshit. That's for the general public to say, look at them, they're good friends. They ain't good friends. You know what, Rudy? What we have, our relationship throughout a lot of Latin comics. You know, yes, there's some animosity. There's animosity between this guy and that guy. Let me tell you something, man. The people who do get along, I love you guys. We have a little gang. We have this understanding. And that's one thing I did not like about comedy. There's other realms of comedy that they just hang out and giggle together. But they're really hating each other. With my realm, with you guys, man, it's like I have a realm of comics that I'm with that it's either me or them. If I don't get the job, I hope they get the fucking job because they deserve it more than I do. I want people to listen to that on the podcast that you're one of those people. It's me and you and Johnny. And we've been laughing for fucking years and we turn each other to different. You know, every once a month you call me with, hey man, I just went out with this commercial. Call your agent. Tell them. We look out for each other. We really fucking do. It's not about, well, fuck Rudy, K Locos. Where's Mike Robles today? Nowhere. He's nowhere. We've seen him come and go, flashing the fucking pants. This guy had a fucking TV show. He was the host of a TV show that promoted more Latin comics than fucking Johnny Carson did. Where is he today? Because he didn't do the work.
Yeah.
There's work involved in this. You got to do the work. You know when you're a kid and they tell you, what's 21 times fucking 52? And they make you show them the fuck. Show me the fucking work. That's what happens in this game with comedy. And it's so funny, the people who don't want to work and the people who want to work. I have a friend of mine who always says, well, nobody calls me for anything. I called the kid 4 times yesterday. He had his machine on throughout the day. So, you know, you're not working. Well, what the fuck were you doing that your answering machine is on at 2 in the afternoon? It's the same people.
Exactly.
You know, nobody calls me crying anymore. For 10 years, people used to call me crying. And one of those people was Marilyn Martinez. Towards the end, she was very angry about it. And I told her, this anger, get out there and do something. You could sit at home all day and call, and this guy's doing this, and they gave this to Lisa Lampanelli. It don't matter. You have a job to do. And that's, you know, that's why you're still at the fucking ice house after 15 years, Rudy.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you, George. Yeah, you know, it's a blessing, man, too. So, you know, a lot of guys, you know, we've had a lot of guys go through there, man, that have been very, very successful. You know, not all of them call me back anymore, but, you know, but like you're talking about the work, man, these guys that are just working their ass off, Gabriel Iglesias being one of them, man. You know, we get a lot of people talking, you know, maybe a little jealous about his success. But, you know, I remember the kid doing fucking backyard parties and, you know, doing shit for dog catchers and shit.
What the fuck are you talking about? I remember you sending me and him down to fucking Tucson, the Bugsies. for Bugsy, $150 on a Wednesday night. $150 on a Wednesday night. You took a plane from Burbank on Southwest to Tucson. You came back the next day at 10 o'clock, coked up, your dick sucked with a spider bite on your neck and some pussy on your breath. Fucking disgusting. This club, they would let you in if you gave them a bug at the door on Wednesday nights. If you picked up a caterpillar and gave it to them at the door, they let you in.
Freaks. Remember Big Alex, the promoter guy, the 600-pound guy?
600 pounds. He had 9 necks. He had flaps behind, and he lost a bunch of weight. He had to get healthy, right?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he did the... He did
still 300 and some odd pounds.
Right, he did the fucking surgery. Great guy. That bar, people would come up to you and give you Coke rocks, pills, explosives, Gorilla biscuits, grenades. They didn't give a fuck. If they came up over the board, I was right there. I mean, it was fucking crazy. I remember getting in cars with people and going to rides to get Coke and crazy chicks. One night I was in the front seat of a car with these two Mexican dudes, and I had a chick in the back and two guys in the back, and they were both fingering her, and everybody's doing Coke with the fucking pussy finger. It was tremendous. It was tremendous. You don't forget that in your comedy career. But me, Gabriel, and Mommy went down there. What's the comedian that's the mommy?
Oh, Debbie.
Debbie Gutierrez went to fucking...
Debbie Gutierrez.
So she was in the middle seat, and me and Gabriel were in the corner seats, and we both fell asleep on it. She goes, I woke up, I had 600 pounds on top of me. That's when Gabriel lost his virginity, was on the road in Tucson.
Yeah, some exactly. That's dick. Right, man.
Yeah, I mean, this is...
Yeah, he was 20 years old, 20, 21 years old.
And what people at home don't understand is, you know, that you could give somebody $1 million, you give them 20 TV shows, you give them 20 women. And I'm going to tell you something. On your deathbed, you're not going to remember none of that. You're going to remember going to Tucson with Gabriel and getting your dick sucked in a closet while he's in a fuck. You know, the hotel they put you up in was possibly... The worst
roaches used to answer the door,
hotel
man.
In the nation. One night, a girl knocked on my door that was a tourist. She was so scared. She asked if she could sleep on the floor, if nothing would happen. She ended up, I think I ate her pussy and tickled her feet or some shit. I mean, it was crazy. The doors didn't close. Crack hoes. There were hookers in the hotel.
Right,
you could get drugs in the hotel. You go back to the hotel, ask the fucking guy at the counter, you know, can you send me something up? Within an hour, somebody would knock on your door with a 40. It was,
wow.
And you know, have you seen the hotel lately?
No, I haven't been there, man.
It's fucking beautiful. There. They redid it. It was across the, so you landed, you went to the hotel, you checked in, and you walked right across the street to the taco place. There was like a burrito place, and then you went right back to the fucking, you went right back to the fucking hotel, you did the show, you went back to the show fucking hammered, and then you woke up and fucking got on the plane the next day. Old school comedy. You were back Thursday morning with $150 in your pocket. If you bought Coke,
you
came back with $30 in your pocket.
Big money, man.
And now, let me ask you something else, Rudy. You also were the first Mexican on Lopez. What George Lopez's show. You were the first Mexican on The Tonight Show. You were the first Mexican on Arsenio. Tell me all your credits.
I was there on The Tonight Show, man.
All right, so
I did George's show when he had that Lopez Tonight thing. I was the first Latino comic.
Oh, shit.
You know, so I don't know. Do I get a fucking crown with a cape or something, you know?
You're good till we get a black mayor.
What's that?
You're good till we get a black mayor. Right now, Villa Rigolosi has a picture of you in his office. Once he gets fired, then you're fucking done.
Yeah, so, but that was cool. I mean, I got some work out of that, but, you know. That was it, man. That was it. I mean, I've done other TV shows, but as far as, like, late night, I never did The Tonight Show or Arsenio. I'm still waiting for Arsenio to call me.
Fuck that, dude. You did some good movies. I'm going to tell you something, Rudy. And I'm going to tell you something from the bottom of my heart, and I know that a lot of people who listen to the podcast are in this part of California, whatever. I don't know what you people do on Wednesday nights or what you don't do. But the guy I have on the phone has helped more young comics than a lot of other people do in this career. He gave us a forum on Wednesday nights, and yeah, sometimes the checks bounce, you know, shit like that. But it was still, you know, if it's, are you still doing the Saturday night? At the
no, I don't do the Saturdays anymore, man. Okay. We've gotten to that place, that same place. It's called Rudy's.
Rudy's.
Ironically. And you know, the guy, the owner, 78 years old, so he'll hire me for 6 weeks, and he'll fire me. He'll call me back the next week. You know what will work here? Comedy. You should try it. So we'll go back, you know, a month after. You've been there, what, 100 times, right?
Yeah, yeah. I just went down there about 6, 7 weeks. About 3 months ago, I went down there with Edwin on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
Edwin had a spot, so we were going to get high, and we went down there. But
yeah.
I don't know what you do. I know the tickets are cheap on Thursday, on Wednesday nights. I know that Rudy puts his heart and soul into this fucking show. It's 15-year anniversary. He wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't any good. And, you know, yeah, you've had your peaks and your valleys, but you deserve the respect that you deserve, Rudy Moreno. You're,
brother, thank you, man. Thanks.
You know,
and thank you for being part of that, man. And
yeah, even though they don't put my pictures on the wall and nothing like that, you got all your little Mexican buddies jumping up and down with hats on. You got no fucking Cubans on there and shit representing. You got no pictures of Fidel. That's okay. I love you anyway, cocksucker. But no. All jokes aside, one thing you don't forget in your career is the little times, like when we were at the Commerce Casino and a comic would be on stage.
That was always fun.
And I would whisper under my breath, Rudy. Rudy. I would say Rudy 1,000 fucking times until he heard me.
And just see me turn around. What, Joey? What,
Joey? Rudy, where do I sit? Rudy, Rudy, let me take an Altoid. Rudy, where's the fucking free drink ticket? Rudy, where's the water? Rudy, where's the stage? Rudy, where's the microphone?
You just love torturing me.
Rudy,
man.
What time am I going up? Rudy, can I work dirty? Can I tell him about the time I fucked the chick up the ass and she sucked my dick? No, Joey. You know, it's funny, at the end of the day, when you look at all the places you perform and the people that give you, the people who gave you the stage time when you needed it the most, you know, you don't forget those things. Not in my world, you don't. When you're even when you're
drunk, you're the last of a dying
even when you drive past the place, you ever drive past the Brave Bull? It might be a linoleum store now. But you look at it, a little tear comes to your eye. You're like, how many grams of blow did I do in that bathroom?
Oh, man, Jesus.
You know.
Could have bought the fucking Brave Bull, dude.
You know, and there's so many places. Listen, man, 7, 8 years ago, these Mexican cats, Fly, Jeff Garcia, Felipe, Edwin, every night we had comedy. Every night. Yeah. And they opened their doors to anybody. It wasn't Latin comedy or Filipino comedy. If you had heart and balls to go up on that stage, they put you on those stages. From West Covina to fucking, what's Patrick DeGear's room in the fucking bad area in San Diego.
These guys have created
their own way. Let me tell you something about these Latin comics, these young guys. You know, when they walk in the Comedy Store and the Improv and the Laugh Factory, they don't have management. And this goes the same for black comics. A lot of ethnic comics do this. And I want people at home to know that these guys, you know, it's not like they're opened up with warm hearts. They don't have open mics and all these things to get on stage. You know what these motherfuckers do? They create their own venues. And they grow in their own venues. From Rudy to Willie Barcena to Jeff Garcia to Edwin. I seen these guys blossom on their own fucking, the sweat of their own labor. It's not like somebody made a path for them.
Right.
That's one part of being a comic. There's comics that get on stage 3 times and 3 Art sees you and they love you and you're witty. And they put you on all these stages. Well, some people don't have that opportunity. And I was one of those guys that didn't have an opportunity. Right. Yeah, I got spots at the store. But for me to really improve, it was the Brave Bulls. It was the Daily Planet. It was Casa Latina's. It was all those fucking bars that you would never go into. And that you guys would get us $20, $30 a free meal. You know, Gilbert at the VFW, the best tacos in California for 50 cents. The best. And then the fucking room went away. I used to be more pissed off about not getting paid than the fucking taco. You know what I'm saying? Like, this was a part.
Yeah.
You know, when Gilbert called you, it wasn't about the $50. It was that you were going to eat the best tacos in fucking town.
Exactly.
You know, you went down there. You brought your date with you. You brought some reefer. So these are the things you remember. And I thank you, Rudy, because you started a generation of these guys. You taught them that if they didn't give you a stage, you had to build your own fucking stage. You have to build your own stage, man. You did that with the Brave Bull. The Brave Bull was Fridays and Saturdays. And sometimes you threw a Wednesday in there. And so what? You didn't give us the money for the rent. You gave us money for a couple cocktails and a bag of weed. But the opportunity was the stage time, which is what these cats fucking miss out on. They don't know that it's like jujitsu. You need to get on the mat. You can watch all the instructional DVDs you want. And you can go, you can hang out with Eddie Bravo and you can hang out with Steven Seagal. But if you don't get on that fucking mat, it's the same thing with comedy. And you got to start at these fucking disgusting places, you know, where Mexicans throw hats. You know, I used to feel bad for white dudes that would go up in front of Mexican crowds. And they'd kill. And those comics today are comedians. Say what you want about Darren Carter, the party starter. When he goes in front of you, he gives you a strong set because he learned how to be a comic in those hell holes. And that's what they are. They're Vietnam for comics. And, you know, comics do those things three times, and they're like, I'm not going back over there. I'm going to the comedy store. Sure. Sure. It's fucking real work. You got to go up there and convince them that you're fucking funny. So, you know what? I can say whatever the fuck I want to. Part of my career is owed to guys like you, Rudy. So I want to thank you for what you do. I want people to support you at the Ice House. Rudy's up there every fucking Wednesday at 8 o'clock. You make reservations. 626, what's the number? 577-1894. The tickets are cheap. They got margaritas. They got Mexican broads with big fucking asses. Rudy's going to get the drummer from El Compadre to start going up down Wednesdays and selling coke out the back door. We're going to turn this into Little Guadalajara. We're going to bring up Vermont, get some t-shirts, some hats. You can buy a Versace purse. It's all over. Rudy's what you need to do. You need to put a fucking Mexican bazaar up there with the emphasis on bazaar. You know what I'm saying? Some blows, some hats. Mexicans aren't making money by selling straw hats. They're making money by selling the fucking puto. You got to invite the cartel up there, cocksucker. I get emotional when it comes to Mexican people. You know that.
Crazy, man.
I love you, brother, and I'm happy you called.
Everybody that, you know, the outside of Joey Diaz, you know, rough, tough, fucking street guy, but you're a fucking sweetheart, man. You're a huge fucking teddy bear, man. Although I saw you kick the shit out of somebody at the Ice House, but...
No, I just spit in his face and bit slapped him. I didn't kick
No.
I had to get out of there.
The funny thing was Ramos, the next day... Because Ramos had picked you up outside, remember that?
Yeah, he drove me with the cops looking for me. They had the helicopter.
The cops were looking for you. The fucking helicopter was out there and everything else. And the next day I called him up and I had downloaded some police calls on from my computer and I put them in the background. And I called him and I told him he was that we were looking for him. And you should have seen him squirm. Well, you know, I'm a substitute teacher, and I'm a comic, and I was out there just looking for my friend and all this shit. And I told him, I said, look, one of two things: you either bring Joe Diaz down to the station, or I'm just going to go pick you up right now. How do you want to do this? The fucking guy was dying, man. Right. So then I finally said, we're going to send Officer Rudy Moreno down there. He said, you motherfucker, man! If I fire you,
you know, Rudy, and I got to tell you something, man. I still get a lot of grief over that, over going off on Jeff at the funeral parlor. I mean, a lot of people won't do business with me. A lot of people won't hire me because of that. And I don't really give a fuck because I stuck up for my friend. And that's something that in this business, Lily, people forget.
You're a stand-up dude, man.
No, I stuck up for everybody because he abused everybody. That guy called himself a Mexican. He called himself a Latino. He called himself a man. And he wasn't any of those fucking things. He was trying to fuck us up the ass with his left hand. And, right. You know, from all, you know, he was making big money off those festivals, giving us $50 a set. And you had to get your own plane ticket for Latino Laugh Fest. Well, I know he took care of some people, but the rest of us. But two people he tortured were me and Marilyn. He tortured us, and he tortured a lot of Latin comics. You're supposed to give your people
love. Why is that? Why did he single out you guys?
The one festival, he told us that we were too dirty, and he made us showcase like three or four times to make us feel bad. He wanted us to prove a point that we could work clean. I couldn't work clean. I told him the truth. So you know what he did that year? He made the festival and he added a dirty show and he had Carlos host it. He didn't invite me. And I never forgot that. I never forgot what it did to me psychologically. I never forgot what it did to me emotionally. I never forgot. And I became his friend after that. I understood the business sense of it. I understood it's a business. This isn't a popularity club. So I understood that. But then he kept doing things. He kept doing little things, and I kept hearing about him. Well, like one day he called me and he goes, hey, I want you to do this documentary. It only pays $50. And I told Pat Buckles no. And 2 days later they called me. They went up to $500. There was a $450 gap, and I still left $300 or $400 or $500 on the table.
Right.
But he wasn't out to help his own people. He was out to help his pocket. And you know what, man? That was about the time I was getting off cocaine. I was clean about 7 nights the night I attacked him at the funeral, at Marilyn's funeral. But I've never regretted that night. To me, it was one of the, because I spoke for Marilyn from the grave. And it was something, listen, man, when you have somebody die close to you, you see how people act at funerals, they act like fucking bullshit artists. You really want to go to a bullshit funeral, go to a bullshit funeral here.
Right.
And when I saw him walk into the church that afternoon, I knew he was a dead man. And then when I saw him at the Comedy Store eating the free food with his fucking wife and his attorney, I knew he was going down. And if you, I don't know if you were there that night. I went on stage and I tried to do my presentation to Marilyn, but in the middle, Marilyn's spirit wouldn't fucking let me. I couldn't even focus. I kept seeing him out of the corner of my eye, and I had to speak. I had to speak. That's how I was raised, bro. You stick up for your friends. Your friends are what you got. When you go out there with somebody, you stick up for them. Fuck the movie business. Fuck television. Fuck everybody. That's how I was raised. I don't know how the rest of these mutts were raised with no soul. But right. there's no way somebody's going to make a mockery out of a friend of mine in this town ever again. And that's what I learned when I got off the blow, that I just wasn't a junkie no more. I was a man. I had to start acting like a man. That's what kept me straight. And I went off on him. And I went off on him that night, and I left it at that. And you called me the night he was going to be at the Ice House. You warned him. And he still went up there. And he tried to be cute, Rudy.
Yeah.
He wasn't, he didn't stay away from me. He tried to be cute. He kept coming into the game green room and ordering drinks and staring me down. And I sat there like a little fucking faggot for 45 minutes. And then after a while, with my faggot fear that I had, because I'm as scared of everybody else, I thought about my wife and I thought about my career. I thought about everything and how I had to behave myself and how I'm a better Catholic and how I'm a better man. I went back to the fucking street level that I'm from and I went up to him, spit in his face and smacked him. You know, he kept telling me, go ahead, fat boy, do something. When I spit in his face, he didn't know what the fuck to do. And then he tried to spit back, and he spit like a faggot. That had a little cum in his mouth. He swallowed the whole load, but he still had that last load. He tried to spit that at me, and I ducked. And that's when I bit slapped him. And I just kept walking out. As I was walking out, the cops were walking in. They were coming in with, I walked right past them in the Ice House alleyway. Then I got into Rick parked outside, like on the fucking street, like a fag that he is, instead of parking in the parking lot. But if he would have parked in the parking lot, the cops would have stopped us. So,
right.
Dig that. But Rudy, I love you. But that's why I did that, Rudy. I didn't do that for me. I got no satisfaction. That was for the fucking Mexicans that wanted to smack him, but didn't know what. I beat him to the punch before Willie got his hands on him. You know what I'm saying? I saved his ass. I'll see you up there, brother. I love you. Good luck tonight. Call the Ice House tonight, 626-577-1894. Get your tickets. Give Rudy a hug. Bring him some reefer. Do something.
Thank you, Joe. God bless you, man.
I love you, brother. I'll call you later, cocklicker.
Take care.
Bye. What do you think about that, cocksucker? Huh?
I don't know. But I mean, I've heard the basic story behind it, but I don't really know. Like the full story of what happened.
That's what happened, man. I got sick and fucking tired of somebody fucking with us, so I had to raise my goddamn hand. And then, and that's what usually happens. I raise my hand, I get caught. I'm the bad guy after that. But you know what? Fuck it. That's what we're all about. If you got nothing to stick up, if you can't stick up for your friends, fuck them. Fuck them. Let's read some advertisers for these motherfuckers. On it. I love you. If you're having a problem with your cardio, you're having a problem with your fucking ankle, you know, you want your mental abilities to, you want to think quick, you want all cylinders clicking, you got Alpha Brain, you got Shroom Tech, you got Strong Bone, you got digestive enzymes, you got the Hemp Force protein powder, if you're trying to build muscle, you got, listen, go to fucking Onnit.com today, cut the shit, Onnit.com, and look at the selection of stuff they got, from supplements, to fucking ropes, to fucking kettlebells, to gorilla kettlebells. They got everything. They got a new thing that you push. Listen, go to Onnit.com. I could sit here and blow smoke up your ass. All I know is Shroom Tech works for me. I'm 300 fucking pounds. I'm over there doing three fucking rounds now at 5 minutes apiece. I'm doing the class. I'm not huffing and puffing. I'm not sore the next day. Please, do yourself a favor. Cut the fucking shit. You want to start doing something today? You want something back and you want to feel better about yourself? You want more confident? That's what it takes. Sometimes you got to do a couple squats. You got to do some jumping jacks. You look better. You get some sun. Boom. Onnit.com. Go to joeydiaz.net. Go to the Onnit Box and Press.
Church.
Church. Get 10% off. Get put on the mailing list. They got stuff with different packages. They got the Stay Onnit program. That means you don't have to order who gots. You get the Alpha Brain, the Shroom Tech, and the Strong Bone sent to your house. You don't got to do nothing. All right? Nothing. And you get additional 10% off. Go to Onnit.com. Press
Church.
In the box, get your 10% off. Take care of yourself. Be a good friend to yourself, cocksucker. If you're not going to be a friend to yourself, who the fuck's going to love you, okay? Number two, Nature's Box. Again, nutritionalist approved snacks. Tremendous. Delicious. My wife even said to me, she had one of the granolas the other day. She goes, it's not fuck. I mean, everything they put out, those little apricot fucking crackers, the sesame sticks, the fucking cocoa fucking almonds. I just killed another fucking package about a week and a half ago. Those cocoa almonds last in the house about an hour and a half after I get delivered. I wish I was fucking bullshitting to you. The first time you order from Nature's Box, you get 50% off. 50% off. 50% off. There's no Jews that work at that company. They ain't fucking around. Go. 50% off. Go to joeydiaz.net. Go to Nature's Box and press.
Joey.
Oh, shit. Joey. J-O-E-Y. Get 50% off your first order. Go on there. Just do me a favor. Go to naturesbox.com. Look at the selection. They're all nutritional to prove. They're healthy snacks. You're going to love it. You're going to feel good about yourself. In the morning when you wake up, you're going to have a hard on. When you eat all that fucking food with process, it affects your fucking helmet. It affects your fucking vagina lips. Fuck all that
the
shit.
The lips.
Yeah, you don't want the vagina lips affected. I read that on Google. Anyway, go to naturesbox.com and get your snacks today. 50% off your first order. What are they pressing the box?
Joey.
J-O-E-Y. Number two, Dollar Shave Club. I'm getting sick and fucking tired of talking about Dollar Shave Club. Sick and tired. You know why? Because one of the best bargains out there. One of the best bargains out there. One of the best bargains out there. I'm trying to save you money here, motherfuckers. I always try to save you a little bit of Gita's. I'll send you somewhere that has a lunch special. My wife told me that fucking Ruth Chris, for the summer, they're going to have a $49.95 special. You get a salad, a soup, an entree, and a dessert for $49.95. Are you kidding me? They don't sponsor me. But I'm telling you, that's a good deal. Just like Dollar Shave Club. That's why I'm telling you that. They got a $1 deal, a $6 deal, a $9 deal per month. Per month. You know what it is to spend $6 a month on razors? It's nothing. Nothing. You get four razors sent to your house, double fucking blade. If you get the $9 package, you got double razors. They're sharper than fuck. You could slide a fucking Puerto Rican's throat with it. Plus, it has an aloe strip on there. We ain't fucking around no more. For a dollar, you get two little blades. They work tremendous. But that means your budget for the year is $12 on blades. That's what you spend fucking one time when you go there a month to one of these stores to get blades. Don't be a Mama Luca the Yay. Go to Dollar Shave Club. Sign up. $1, $6, or $9 program. Right there. Tell them, Lee, we go to the box and press.
Church.
Church. C-H-U-R-C-H. Who's better than fucking you? Nobody.
You guys should order it. He's getting worked up.
I'm getting red in the fucking face. Plus, you can shave your wife's asshole. Plus, they got the fucking peppermint snap wipes. What do they call it?
One Wipe Charlie.
One Wipe Charlie. Plus, you got the shave butter. It takes away the fucking ingrown hairs. You look like fucking Sinatra when he was getting his pole smoked and his dick sucked. Number four, nailedatlife.com. These are my homies from West New York, Cuban, all the way to the end, Memorial High School. Represent. These motherfuckers put together a vapor pen that is sensational. It burns the wax. It burns the oil. It burns your fucking eyeballs. You don't give a fuck. You understand me? After you smoke this thing, your eyeballs are on fire. Go to nailedatlife.com. Get 10. How much did you get off?
20%.
20% off. What do they have to do? Mention Joe.
Joey Diaz.
Church, Joey, Nuts. Fuck. Anything you mention, you get 20 fucking percent off. And it's the best vapor pen in the market. Anyway.
And I have to go back to NatureBox.com, but I just went to their website. They have something called Cocoa Waffle Crisps. And it looks like mini chocolate waffles.
Listen to me.
I have to get
the thing I like about Nature's Box is every week they add new fucking stuff.
Oh my God.
They're always creeping while you're sleeping. That's why I work with them. That's why we work with me. I'm with them. They're with us. Bam! Let me give some shout outs to some beautiful fucking people.
Oh my God.
Luciano Soprano, you bad motherfuckers. Jim Bergman. Vanilla Keisha, you're looking better than ever. If I get my hands on you, I'm going to suck that black little monkey. Oscar Nunez. Hazel Locks, you're looking bad too to the fucking bone, cocksucker. Jason G and my brother from Vegas always looking out for me. Surveillance 702, the talking lair, you bad motherfucker. Want to give a shout out to Cleo and Water Bucket, the executive fucking producers of life out there, taking it to the next level. You got a question about the church, you contact Water Box. You got a problem with the church, you contact Water Box. He'll bitch slap you to death with that fucking board. He was out there with sharks and shit. All these people think they're tough. Waterboard's out there with a fucking board and a stick out there with a flashlight in his fucking head with an Asian wife who's bad to the bone. I love you, Waterbox of Cleo, and all you motherfucking church supporters. Tracy, you know, Constantine, fucking Leon. I love you motherfuckers. You're my backbone. The main number one fucking Chinaman. Chung, he's some Chung Kennedy, you bad motherfucker, hanging out since the Ming Dynasty. That fucking Chinaman, you understand? He has direct roots to the Ming Dynasty. That's why he's my fucking Goombarich. Anyway.
Don't go to that website if you're high.
Which one? Nature's Box? Yeah, you're done. You're going down if you go to Nature's Box. It's going to cost you $10,000 today.
Well, give you half off, though.
I was telling, you know, sometimes you have a problem with a friend. When I was talking to Jessica yesterday, we talked about my dark years and the things I learned. And this is what the book is about. It's about the lessons that I learned. And there was one really valuable lesson I learned that I'm not proud of. And it was, when my mother died, she had a good friend named Zoraida. Did I ever tell you about Aline?
Yeah.
Zoraida, she covered my spread for a couple of years. And, you know, the night that my mother died at the funeral was like 4 or 5 nights long, and there were 24-hour funerals that Cubans do 24/7. They don't do that 5 to 7 view, and fuck no, the body looks better at 2 in the morning.
Oh, Jesus.
So Cubans come in and they drink and they smoke and they do blow and they do whatever the fuck they do. They pray, and I'm sitting there one night because we did the funeral in 8-hour shifts. I would work 8 hours, my uncle would work 8 hours, and my stepfather would stay for 8 hours. One night I didn't want to be home alone, so I just sat there and I watched Zoraida go up to the casket and get on her hands and knees, and she was talking to her, you know, and I knew Zoraida from a child. Zoraida was always involved in my life. She babysat me when I was a baby, but she was always involved in my life. Every time my mom went into the city, we would stop by Zoraida's. Zoraida was a drug dealer on 113th Street, you know, and she lived on the second floor, and it was like fucking Walking Dead when you walked into her building. People were shooting heroin in the hallways.
Jesus.
New York was a complete different animal then. And we would stop over there, and I would walk up the stairs and see these people, and you walk in, and Zoraida had a bodyguard and a chihuahua, and she sold coke, and she was a 5'4" black Cuban lady. And, you know, 6 months before my mom died, Zoraida started coming by a lot more. It's like she knew. And when my mother died, she was the second call I made, and she came right over. And at the funeral this one night, at the wake, I heard her saying shit to my mother. My mother was in the casket, and she was touching her face, and she was even doing bumps while she was talking. This is how crazy Zoraida was. So I heard her say something, that she was going to take care of me, and then she came over. She promised my mother she was going to take care of me. And she came over, and she hugged me, and, you know, she told me not to be scared, that she was going to be there for me. And every Sunday, sure enough, she would take a cab from 113th and 5th to Union City, New Jersey, and I'd meet her at Otto's Bar, and we'd have a drink, and we'd eat, and then we'd go to the funeral and put flowers, the cemetery, and put flowers for my mother, and she'd sprinkle coke on the fucking grave.
Really?
Yeah, this lady was crazy, and she'd blow a fucking joint and shit. So Zoraida would give me a couple hundred a week, and she'd bring me a nickel bag from the city, you know, and this went on from 79 to 80, you know, something. And at this point, after I got out of high school, I was still getting money from Zoraida here and there, but I was using her, Lee. I was calling her up and going, I needed money for school books. Or I was going with my friends to spring break. I wasn't even in college. And I would go over there, get $300 from her cash, and an 8-ball of coke. You know, and it was just a really something that, you know, I've done a lot of bad things. Nothing compares to how bad this was, how I felt. Because when I lost my mind in 84, 30 years ago, I fucking stopped calling over there. Because I had robbed somebody, and I thought they were going to call her, and she was going to know, and I was embarrassed. So for some reason, my spiral downhill, I stopped calling over there. And I finally got the balls to call one January after 6 months. And she asked me where I had been. And I told her I got arrested. I made up some lie. And she said that while I was arrested, I got robbed. They robbed me for everything. My dog died. The IRS seized my assets. I'm fucking broke. Somebody, when they robbed me, they broke my leg in 3 places, and nobody was here to take care of me. Where the fuck were you? And I just hung up the phone and never talked to her again. I mean, that was how weak I was as a human being. I just hung up the phone. There was nothing to talk about. I had failed her, and there was no words really to say. I didn't even think of the word that would have helped everything was I love you, and it didn't. I didn't even say that. I just hung up the phone, never called her. And to this day, I don't know what happened. I felt really bad about myself that night, and I said to myself that, you know, at that age, I learned the gift of friendship, you know, I knew what friendship was. She carried the, you know, this is why I went off on Jeff Valdez that night. Because I know the gift of friendship. I know a real friend when I fucking see one. And I learned so much from what she did for me, she did for my mother. Nobody does that. I knew the people that were even tied with my mother that turned their backs on me. This lady stuck to her fucking word. What's wrong with your lip, Lee? You appear like a fucking... You look like that dog that shit on your head the other day, cocksucker. Some fucking dog shit on...
Lee scratched my
showed
head.
Up to my head the other night with a little scratch of shit. You know when you, you know when you shit your undies? Just that little line, like it goes in your ass and you still got shit in your ass. You got that little line in your underwear.
Yeah, but it wasn't...
That's what you had on your head with a little blood in the middle, like... Don't fucking lie, cocksucker. You still got the stain is gone. So he was on your head. It's a pug and he shit on your head. It's okay. But the moral of the story is, man, that girl, I learned two things. I learned that friendship is a motherfucker. You know, if you want a good friend, you got to be a good friend. I think you farted. And I also, I also told myself that I would never use anybody again. That was the valuable lesson I learned from that. I never believed in using people anyway, and at the time I did it because of my addiction. And it just worked, didn't work out. So at the age of 21, I learned not to fucking use anybody, and that's the lesson I learned from Zoraida. And that's the lesson for a week. If you want to be a friend, if you want good friends, you got to be a good fucking friend. And sometimes we take that for granted, friendship. Don't ever take it for fucking granted. Keep slinging dick. It's Wednesday, May 21st. I love you, cocksuckers. See, next week we got Monday, Wednesday morning, and a Wednesday live podcast at the Ice House, 8:30, surprise guest. Don't forget, I got the Ice House next week, and I got San Diego Harris on the 29th, which is Thursday night at 9 o'clock. Don't forget about me. Go to joeydiaz.net for the mugs, t-shirts, and the patches. The patches and the t-shirts are going like fucking hotcakes. The mug slowed down a little bit. Go for it. You know, once these t-shirts are gone, I'm getting a new design. So if you want a t-shirt with a nutsack, a set of balls, and a cross on your shirt, support the fucking podcast.
The Joey Diaz starter kit.
That's right. Also, we're on Amazon.com. If you're going to order something, go through Amazon. I want to thank our sponsors on it. Nature'sBox.com, Dollar Shave Club, Hulu Plus, Nailed It Life, and Escape Pod Tank for always having our backs. But most importantly, I want to thank you cocksuckers for listening to the show and having heart and giving us the love you give us, you know, to me and Lee. Lee, you bad motherfucker.
Bad mother.
I don't want that dog shit on your
head. There's no shit. If you're listening to this live today, our good friend Steve Simone's recording a CD tonight in Brea. So if you want to come down to the improv, I'll be down there saying hi. Now that the show's over, don't forget to sign up for DollarShaveClub.com. Get high-quality razors sent to your door every month for a fraction of what you pay at retail. Now go to dollarshaveclub.com/church or just go to joeydiaz.net and click on the Dollar Shave Club banner. The show is also sponsored by naturebox.com. Order great tasting healthy snacks at 50% off. Snack smarter in the new year with healthy and delicious treats like everything bagel chips and baked sweet potato fries. Support this podcast and get 50% off of your first order. Go to naturebox.com, promo code Joey. That's naturebox.com, promo code Joey. And thank you to NailedItLife.com, like we said, for all the oil and wax smokers out there, for the premier vapor pen on the market, go to NailedItLife.com and type in Joey Diaz, no spaces, and you're going to save 20% off of the vapor pen.
I'm serious, what y'all think about? Oh, shit. Here you go, cocksucker.
Hey, baby, get the bubblegum in this motherfucker.
Bad motherfuckers. Do your thing, baby. Have a great day. Sling dick with both hands. Don't believe the hype. Tell them all to suck your dick.
What? Big sling dick. What is it?
With so much drama in the LBC, it's kind of hard being Snoop D-O-double-G, but I somehow, some way, keep coming up with funky ass shit like every single day. May I kick a little something for the G's and make a few wins as I breeze through. 2 a.m. and the party still jumping cause my mama ain't home. I got bitches in the living room getting it on and they ain't leaving till 6 a.m. So what you wanna do? Shit, I got a pocket full of rubbers and my homeboys do too. So turn off the lights and close the doors. But
for what?
We don't love them hoes.
Yeah.
So we gon' smoke an ounce to this. G's up, hoes down, while you motherfuckers bounce to this.
Rolling down the street, smoking window, sipping on gin and juice.
Laid back,
with my mind on my money and my money on my mind.
Rolling down the street, smoking window,
back. I got me some Seagram's gin. Everybody got their cups, but they ain't chipped in. Now this type of shit happens all the time. You gotta get yours, but fool, I gotta get mine. Everything is fine when you're listening to the D.O.G. I got the cultivating music that be captivating he who listens to the words that I speak as I take me a drink to the middle of the street and get to mackin' to this bitch named Shady. She used to be the homeboy's lady.
Oh, that bitch.
80 degrees when I tell that bitch, please raise up off these N.U.T.s, cause you get none of these at ease. As I mob with the dog pound, feel the breeze, be I chump jet.
Rolling down the street, smoking indo, sipping on gin and juice.
Laid back,
with my mind on my money and my money on my mind.
Rolling down the street, smoking indo, sipping on gin and juice.
Laid back,
with my mind on my money and my money on my mind.
Later on that day, my homie Dr. Dre came through with a gang to Tango Ray. And a fat ass Jake of some bubonic chronic that made me choke. Shit, this ain't no joke. I had to back up off of it and sit my cup down. Tango Ray and chronic, yeah, I'm fucked up now. But it ain't no stopping, I'm still popping. Dre got some bitches from the city of Compton to serve me, not with a cherry on top. Cause when I bust my nut, I'm raising the box to cop. Don't get upset, girl, that's just how it goes. I don't love you hoes, I'm out the dope. And I'll be
rolling down the street, smoking indo, sipping on.
Laid back,
with my mind on my money and my money on my mind.
Rolling down the street, smoking indo, sipping.